chromosomes. Little strands of nucleic acids and proteins are the fundamental genetic instructions that tell us who we are at birth. Most people are born with 46 chromosomes, but each year in the United States, about 6,000 people are born with an extra chromosome, making them a person with Down syndrome. If you've ever encountered someone with Down syndrome, you know that they are some of the kindest, most joyful people you will ever meet. They truly have something extra. My name is Lisa Nichols, and I have spent the last 24 years as both the CEO of Technology Partners and as the mother to Allie. Allie has something extra in every sense of the word. I have been blessed to be by her side as she impacts everyone she meets. Through these two important roles as CEO and mother to Allie, I have witnessed countless life lessons that have fundamentally changed the way I look at the world. While you may not have an extra chromosome, every leader has something extra that defines who you are. Join me as I explore the something extra in leaders from all walks of life and discover how that difference in each of them has made a difference in their companies, their families, their communities, and in themselves. I'm thrilled to have Scott Richard on the show today. Scott is the Chief Information Officer at Mercy Health Systems. If you like this episode today, please go to Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen and leave us a 5-star rating. Well, welcome to the Something Extra podcast, Scott. I am so delighted to have you on the show today.
Thanks, Lisa. It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you.
Yeah. So you and I have known each other for many, many years. In fact, even went to church together for quite some time. And, you know, we're going to talk about all this. You're the CIO for Mercy Healthcare, which is a phenomenal healthcare system. But what a lot of our listeners may not know about you, Scott, is Scott is a fantastic drummer.
Well, thank you very much. I enjoy it. I've been doing it for a long time. And yeah, I do get to do it at my church, which is probably where 90% of my playing is. But I appreciate that. It's really a privilege to get to serve that way.
Yeah. And we probably should do another podcast about this. I cannot even tell you how many people that I know that are technical people, but they've got a musical bent.
There's definitely a connection or a balance or a counterbalance or something. They definitely augment each other. And so I'm a big believer in that, particularly drumming and all kinds of analogies around, you know, how drumming is like the infrastructure of the band. And if you got a bad drummer or you got bad infrastructure, you kind of get the same result. Nothing else really works well.
Oh, so that's good.
There's a lot of things that tie together with music and technology.
Well, I you know what, Scott, in all of your spare time, because I know you have so much spare time.
Right.
I see a book in the wings.
All right. I'm open.
You're open. Well, tell me a little bit about how you grew up. Did you grow up here in St. Louis? I know you went to school at UMSL, but did you grow up in St. Louis?
I did. I'm a little unusual. I haven't strayed very far from where I grew up. I grew up in North County. You're right. I ended up graduating from college at UMSL and went to school at a kind of unusual private Christian school when I was younger that I think was a big part of kind of formed how I work and how I think. Definitely had a stable, nurturing home life and great parents. And as you know, my Christian faith really shaped my view of the world and helped form me and, you know, helping me to see what matters in life and what pursuits are worth pursuing and which ones are hollow, which ones are maybe counterfeit version of a real abundant life. So that's definitely the core of who I am. And so I think that growing up that way and having that basis and faith really helped me to be who I am today. Absolutely.
Yeah. And I want to dig into that further. A mutual friend of ours, I was just talking to last week, you know, Lori Sturgill. In fact, she considers you one of her mentors, Scott. And we were talking and we were just talking about you specifically. Your ears were probably burning, but she said you really do lead by faith and live by faith. And she had all kinds of awesome things to say about you. And so I want to dig into that more. Wow. But yeah, so you can pay her later if you want.
Okay, yeah, that means a lot coming from Lori. I appreciate that.
Yeah, she's fantastic. So you did go to school at UMSL, but you started as an application developer at Mercy.
And I counted up, Scott, I think you've had maybe 7 or 8 roles in your time at Mercy. But before we really hop into that, can you, like your particular journey, can you kind of talk a little bit about the history of Mercy? Because I know it's a really rich history. I mean, the whole thing started, I believe, like almost 200 years ago with an Irish woman named Catherine McCauley, who really wanted to help women and children in Dublin. And then it just became something else and, you know, continued to evolve. So can you tell our listeners just a little bit about the history of Mercy?
Yeah, absolutely. That's one of the most important, one of the most satisfying things in my career here at Mercy is to be part of an organization that is almost 200 years old. And is formed by somebody that had a vision just to help people. And she saw a need in the community of Dublin where women that were at risk were not being cared for. And she utilized an inheritance that she got from a family that took her on to invest in the House of Mercy and created a place for women and children to be safe from the risk of the day. And it's kind of a rough time in that period in Ireland. And eventually she got more women that wanted to join her in the mission. And eventually it merges into healthcare and all kinds of other services. And eventually they spanned the world. They crossed the Atlantic and came to the United States and formed several different healthcare outposts. And so really that culture is very much important to all of us right now. So we all, you know, this concept of the walking sisters, that they didn't stay in the convent. They didn't cloister. They went out and found where the need was. And so that's very much a cultural part of Mercy is let's look for the opportunity. Let's find out where our communities need us the most. All of us very much take that history with us and judge ourselves as to how we're performing today. Or are we meeting the expectation of Sister McCauley from the beginning? And so it's really a powerful thing for all of us to kind of get engaged with and how we serve our community and how we really fulfill our life mission and fulfill our, you know, the faith that we choose, how we fulfill our meaningfulness in that as well.
Yeah. What a rich history. What a rich history. And to your point, you know, Scott, I am sure I know that story permeates throughout the organization and everyone who works at Mercy knows that story and kind of can inform how, you know, you behave every day.
Yeah. And that's actually, you know, I mean, talk about leadership journey that I had to come to the point where I appreciated that because I didn't start out looking for meaningfulness in my career like a lot of people do. You just go, hey, I'm going to find a job that makes decent money. And the further I went in my career, particularly in my 20s, I realized I needed more than that. I needed something that was going to be more meaningful and a little more rounded. And so I learned a lot about myself in the my 20s and early 30s that got me to the point where I kind of knew what's important to me. And then I was able to really get traction in my career.
That's so good. Oh, that's so good. Well, today, Mercy is the 5th largest Catholic health system in the United States, is named one of the top 5 large U.S. health systems for many years by IBM Watson Health. I think, you know, you guys serve millions of patients, at least 40 hospitals, maybe more, 900 physicians, 45,000 employees. I mean, it is a big organization. So I want to dig in, Scott, because like I said, I think you've had 8 different roles since you've been there at Mercy, starting as an application developer. Now you're the CIO. But when you were young, did you have an interest in technology or healthcare, or did you just fall into this? I mean, was there someone that inspired you? I would love to know that.
Yeah. So I'll say this. My dad was a data processing leader, which is what they called it back then, at Mercy for 22 years before I started. So he was a bit of a pioneer here at Mercy. It's funny because I look a lot like him. And so a lot of some of the older sisters would kind of say, hey, are you Chuck? Or are you Scott?
That's funny.
So I definitely had him as an inspiration. But in general, looking back at how I grew up, I was kind of I definitely was a learner and an experimenter. And I would spend summers trying to teach myself some new trick, either, you know, riding a skateboard or learning how to ride a unicycle. And eventually that's how I started playing drums, was I just saw somebody playing drums. I thought I could probably do that. So I gave it a try. And so I, you know, I was kind of a nerdy kid. I liked experimentation and I'd browse the encyclopedia to try to find things I could try out. And, you know, eventually built radios and stereos from my house and So I was always kind of, I got the intuition around technology was fun, but also it was something you can, once you figure something out, you can add something else to make it better. And so I got this concept of layering and building on top of the previous successes. So which is really what kind of what the whole internet age was all about, is that there was some basic discoveries around communication, and then we layered on, you know, the web browser on top of that, and just add. And so that's, to me, that's been a good match for, you know, somebody that thinks like I do. I really enjoy creating synergies and looking around what Mercy has and available to us, and putting things together to make a, you know, to make the whole greater than the sum of the parts. So I think it goes back to how that kind of my curiosity as a kid, and being kind of willing to try new things, and being able to, once I can do this, then maybe I can try this. And that's, you know, that's, I think that was a key part of it. And then when I got into my career, you know, I graduated from UMSL with an information services degree, went to work as a developer for a small organization. And it was a rounded experience, because I was creating software product, but I was also having to sell it. And I would talk to the users and install it. And it was still medical software, it was for physician billing practices. But I had that broad experience of I'm making a product, I'm taking it to the users, they're giving me feedback on what they like and what they don't like, I'm going back and making it better again. And basically kind of helped me set my way I think around this all, you know, has to add up to something that the customer is going to need and want. So it taught me that, gave me kind of that satisfying life cycle of creating something and being able to deliver it. And then I thought, I still didn't know better. I thought, okay, I found another job that paid more money at the phone company. And there I was, a programmer, and I was sitting on the 18th floor with 80 people that did the same thing that I was doing. And I felt very little connection and meaningfulness to it. So then that's when I started realizing, before I make my next move, I really need to know myself a little more and figure out what's important to me and what I want to do.
How did you start that? How did you start that quest, Scott, of like knowing yourself? Did you get a mentor? Did you do some assessments? I mean, you know, because I do think that's really important for you to understand yourself and really what motivates you. And, you know, I'm thinking, as you were talking about working for the phone company and sitting on the 18th floor, I mean, really, every day, what you were doing, you were not mapping it to a greater purpose.
Actually, that's the greater purpose is the key thing. You know, one of the things, I had a little bit of a quarter life crisis, I've heard it called, in my 20s, where I was into my career a little bit. And, you know, looking back, I've read a book now that's helped me understand what it was, but I think I was thrown off by what's called the passion hypothesis. So I felt like, because I didn't have this clear, someday I'm going to be on top of this mountain, or I'm going to do this, and, you know, I'm going to have this long-term, here's how my life's going to end up. I felt like that's what everybody was supposed to have. And I didn't have this real clear goal of what I was doing. And it stressed me out. I didn't have a grand vision. I wasn't Bill Gates or Steve Jobs, which, by the way, I learned later that really Steve Jobs' life goal was to be a Buddhist monk. And he ended up getting expelled from the Buddhist monastery. So that didn't, you know, so that's, so it's
a little detour there.
So eventually, you know, God kind of showed me that I didn't have to have everything all planned out, that there was always some challenge or goal in front of me for the next step. And getting to that next step would then present new opportunities to choose the next step. So I had a realization. I just remember being in the car one day and being in prayer and thinking about my direction. And I just kind of realized, you know, don't freeze up, that really God can't steer a parked car. Keep the major things major, you know the direction you're going, live in a way that honors God, building a future for my family. Those are my goals right now, and try to positively impact the world. And that really helped get past that crisis of, okay, I don't have to have it all figured out. Every step's going to be an opportunity to think about it and seek God for guidance. That kind of made me relax. And I figured out, you know, as opportunities presented themselves in real time, I could just make the right choices. So years later, I read a book that kind of retrospectively framed that for me, about that passion hypothesis being really, I shared that with my kids as they've grown up. Said, hey, don't feel bad if you don't have this whole thing mapped, your whole life mapped out. And I don't disparage anybody who has those kind of epiphanies and know what they want to do from the time they're 12. Many people do that, but
yes,
I found that I needed meaning and as career capital that I could build. And you can build those things in a variety of career choices, but it helped me to gauge whether I'm moving forward or not, as a role that's satisfying for me. And that comes from a book called So Good They Can't Ignore You by a guy named Cal Newport. It was after the fact. I'm like, okay, that's what I was going through in my 20s. I was feeling that passion hypothesis failure and realized I know what's important to me now. I know I'm going to do something meaningful. I want to be good at something. And I want to kind of be left with enough autonomy that I could be creative and create some things myself. And so
what was the name of the book again? Say it one more time, Scott.
I think it's called So Good They Can't Ignore You by Cal Newport.
Oh, Newport. Wow. That is so rich. What wisdom there, you know, and I was just, my brain was firing on all cylinders as you were talking, Scott, because I was just thinking, you know, there's scripture that says man makes his plans, but God guides his steps. Right. And, you know, we don't have to have it all figured out. In fact, that's exhausting, you know, to do that. But, you know, every day, do what you've been told to do that day. Right. And more will be given to you. And there's another book that a friend recommended to me years ago called Just Enough Light for the Step You're On.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, that
I love that title by itself.
I know. It's Just Enough Light for the Step You're On. And for our listeners out there that, you know, this may be really resonating, you know, just take heart and just know that if you're doing every day what you know you're to do, you know, then it'll come and things will reveal. And my goodness, I mean, you probably feel the same way, Scott. I couldn't imagine 40 years ago that I would be doing what I'm doing today.
Right, right.
There's no way I could have orchestrated that and said, here's what I'm going to be doing, you know. But just every opportunity you have, every role you have in an organization, just make the most out of that. And, you know, new opportunities are going to present themselves and things are going to unfold.
Absolutely. The worst thing you can do is freeze up and just kind of wait for that, you know, revelation of what's my passion.
Yes.
Forget all that. But, you know, just work on the basics, you know, honoring God and helping your family and doing something meaningful. And all these things will be added to your career as you go along, and that all the meaningfulness and satisfaction you get out of it. So that was a big relief for me to finally get on that path. And that's really what took me to Mercy, is when I realized, okay, this is not the phone company. This is an organization where I can walk through the lobby and I see cases that give me a lot of compassion. I see neighbors and people from my church, and kind of right away it's like, I want to make this place better. And I want to make sure that people that come here have a good experience and that their life is extended and they get great care. So I really started to feel the privilege of whatever role I was in, being there, being part of this. It's my turn at the wheel for this 200-year-old organization. My dad did it for a generation, and now we're standing on the shoulders of those before us. And so it's a little unique for Mercy, having that rich history, and not everybody has that in their organization. But plus, I was lucky to be in an organization that really saw technology as an enabler for who they wanted to be and transforming healthcare. And so we've just been able to do some really fabulous things, and real privileged to be part of it.
Yeah. And I want to get into all of that. I do have one other question, and then we do need to take a quick break, Scott. But I have a question here for you. So, you know, the last several years have been so difficult, right, for everyone, but I especially believe healthcare, it's been really difficult on the healthcare workers, the people on the front lines. It didn't stop for any of them. And so, you know, but I think Mercy was uniquely positioned when the pandemic hit, because you guys had already been doing virtual telehealth. You guys were already set up for that. You know, what do you think you guys learned as an organization through the last several years? What did you learn as an organization? And then I would like to hear from you. What did you learn personally?
Well, I think there's a lot of learnings through the pandemic, and you're right. One is the need to be agile, and that people have different needs in how they approach us. You know, just to use the COVID framework, as all of a sudden things shifted, where we had to create more capacity for patients. We had to create more safety for our coworkers. We had to create ways for people to come to us differently. So, you know, just calling the call center because I'm concerned I might have COVID in early days, I need a test. And, you know, the first couple of weeks, we have hours wait on the call center. So we got to do something about that. How do we create a digital channel that is a little bit more self-service and spreads the load out a little bit beyond the call center? And so I think we learned that, like lots of other organizations, your digital plans would create a great relief. And this was the time to really kick them in gear. And, you know, going back to your question about what gave Mercy strength, I kind of go back to what I think is important about being able to layer success upon success. At Mercy leadership make good choices about keeping our infrastructure up to date. We were an early electronic medical record participant, and we went live with that earlier than most health systems did. And we got good at it, and we centralized it and make sure everybody used it the same way. And so because we did that, that eventually led way to, hey, we can do some things with virtual care because we have this solid infrastructure and this electronic medical record that we can count on. And then a few years later, you're like, wow, we got all this data. We have 12 plus 13 years of data. We can start using to train machine learning and AI algorithms. That's the next layer. And so that's all possible because you got the fundamentals right, because you got a good drummer in the infrastructure.
Yes.
So then the bass player adds in and says, hey, we can do virtual care with this. And then eventually you get a lead singer that's doing really cool things like predictive medicine and all the things we're doing with data. So it's really, to me, that's, you know, it's layering in all of Mercy's good decisions on top of each other and their willingness to invest in technology. And, you know, even got to the point where for a while, our IT services, we were providing services for other hospital systems.
I know. You commercialized that, you know, didn't you? Like the Epic, you guys, you'd already said that, but I know you guys were one of the earlier adopters of Epic. And then, you know, I mean, my goodness, Scott, this was probably 5 years ago, 4 or 5 years ago. I remember talking to you and you explained to me how you guys were commercializing that and helping other healthcare systems implement their EHRs, you know, which was just phenomenal.
Yeah. Another thing that was not the original plan, but as we saw the opportunity is like, wow, here's some strengths we have. There's some demand in the market. And plus it met Mercy's, you know, kind of ministry objectives is this is really a way to get smaller communities, because a lot of our customers were for smaller communities, a way to get them the technology they would only have if they were in larger cities and affiliated with larger hospitals. So, that was a really great thing. And when the pandemic came, we just had all these things at our disposal. We just more had to tweak things. There's definitely lots of new, you know, digital assets being created, and all the way from COVID testing to communication campaigns and checking on people at home with automated text messaging. So lots of innovation, and we got a really great product team that developed during that period where to kind of help us get a more customer experience focused on how to start things. And we're still doing that now. So that permanently changed us. And then as we came out of the pandemic, now we're in the mode of most healthcare providers are having a really tough financial year. And our digital ambitions kind of turn them, a lot of them, towards our internal processes. And how do we make caregivers life smoother? How do we create more capacity to get more patients through? And how do we just fix things like, you know, reducing length of stay in the hospital? There's so much time that's waiting on administrative things, or even we've all had experiences where you have someone in a family or friends that are, hey, the doctor is going to discharge me today. You know, 16 hours later, you're still waiting to go home. So <Yes. laughs> there's all these opportunities for using our data and analytics to kind of suggest, hey, if we know, you know, we know this about a patient when they're admitted, which likely means they're going to need this kind of service. Let's start getting that lined up ahead of time so that we can just kind of pre-arrange a lot of these things that are very likely to happen based on our data and analytics. So that ends up saving money. And so, you know, we're in a good place where we were built for digital growth and really doing great things for consumers, but now we're seeing benefit, and we're also doing well in our core strength of making sure that we serve efficiently and effectively, and that our coworkers really have the right things they need. You know, never perfect. We got a long ways to go still, but I think those strengths put us in a good position to be able to respond to these challenging times.
I agree. And I love everything that you've talked about, you know, but what's going to stick with me is you started with a good drummer. That's what's going to stick with me, Scott. But you know what? We do need to take a quick break, and we'll be right back with Scott Richard on the Something Extra podcast.
Hey there. In a challenging business climate like this, savvy leaders look to technology to find an edge. This can mean the difference between staying ahead of the curve or playing catch up. It's time to collaborate with the highly skilled experts at Technology Partners. Our team of technologists draws upon decades of experience for your project, with each bringing a passion for solving problems and a track record of success. How can we help you overcome your biggest technology challenges? Visit technologypartners.net to book a free consultation with one of our leaders.
So welcome back to the Something Extra podcast with Scott Richard. We've just been talking about amazing things. What an awesome leader. I'm so privileged to have him on the show. And especially because I know this last weekend, he had a bunch of systems being implemented and then Workday is going to be implemented next week. I mean, so he is in a very, very busy season. And so, but this is just the kind of guy that Scott is. And I just appreciate him so much. But Scott, I want to talk to you a little bit about leadership styles. So the last count I had, there are about 15 different leadership styles. It depends on who you read, right?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
What report that you're reading. But, you know, what would you say that yours is? I know you're not a command and control kind of guy. I know that for a fact. But what would you say your leadership style is?
Yeah, I would say, actually, I try to be, I think authenticity is the biggest thing. And one of the benefits I have of being at Mercy for such a long time is I've been exposed to a lot of areas, and I realize where there's challenges, and realize what's important, and not to overlook the things that might be overlooked by other leaders. I haven't been here for quite a while, so this role is really meaningful to me, and I let people know that, and I try to give them the opportunity to feel meaning as well. So, for instance, you know, we're in a healthcare organization that's 200 years old. One of the things I talk about is, you know, sometimes people ask me, what business are you in? And I would say 20 years ago, I would say technology. I do technology. When people ask me that now, I say healthcare, because ultimately that's the benefit that's being derived from what I do. And that we can do cool things with cloud, and we can do cool things with new digital product. Mm-hmm. But what people care about is we want to make the world better for healthcare, make our communities better. So I like to make sure that the people that work on our teams know that, hey, if you're not picking up that meaningfulness and really making it part of the reason you get up every day, you're shorting yourself. Yeah, you should really be able to tie into that. So it's big for me to make people know how important they are to healthcare. Hey, even if you're in a back-end infrastructure role, boy, we haven't had downtime in such a long time. That's because of all the good planning you've done. And because of that, people are in the ER and they're not having to wait for their imaging results, because the imaging system's up and they're getting results in the way that they should be. You know, all the way to the people that are touching the customers and really making a direct, you know, they have more immediate feedback. But there's a lot of people that are, especially in remote work days, that they're not in the care setting, and you don't realize that you are a healthcare provider. And so I think my style is just trying to encourage people to catch on to that and feel the meaningfulness in their life. And then that'll result in them doing extraordinary things, and they'll be willing to work hard and extra hours when necessary, but also coming up with new ideas. And so I want everybody to kind of to own, we've got this 200-year-old ministry right now. Let's not screw it up. let's move it forward, and let's move it, get it ready for the next generation to do well.
I love that. That's awesome. That's awesome. Well, I told you, I was just talking to our mutual friend last week, Lori Sturgill, and truly she could not say enough good things about you, Scott. You know, your ears were probably burning, but I told you that she really described you. She said you lead and live by faith. And so we've already talked about this a little bit, but I know you're a faith-filled man. Faith is very important to you. Your faith is the most important thing to you. But can you give me some, you know, anecdotals or some ways that you believe your faith has informed your leadership?
Well, I think primarily it gives me perspective. You know, first of all, knowing that when your faith is important to you, you kind of feel like I've got the big things taken care of. The big things in life. I know why I'm here. I know I'm here to honor God. I'm not here to help other people. And so that gives me, no matter what happens, you know, that's what I'm all about. But it also helps me with keeping things in perspective around, you know, like I said, we had a big kind of semi-stressful go live this weekend. But you know what? We've been in stressful situations before. We always get it figured out. We always make things better. And so I think I look at a little bit of my calm demeanor that you mentioned, that Lori mentioned. I think that's some of that comes natural from my dad, I think to me, I'm in my best leadership and decision-making mode when I'm not reactive, but I got my priorities straight. Like I said, I got the big concerns in life mostly figured out, and I know we're going to figure these things out. So I try to think big picture. Every crisis has a start and an end. You know, don't lose who you are. The people that you're leading need to know there's kind of an adult in the room and they're not panicking. So just, that's right. It's really important to stay who you are under pressure. And, you know, I had early parts of my career when I wasn't a leader where I had technology that if I don't get this fixed by 7 a.m., they're going to cancel surgeries or labor and delivery is not going to work well. And so I felt the stress of that. Everything's on me and what am I going to do? And so I have that empathy for others that work with me. It's like, okay, you're not by yourself. You got lots of people who are supporting you. So I think it's just, to me, it just kind of comes natural, part of this, just my trust in God overall, but also knowing that, hey, in the big picture, this is all going to work out. And then we're going to have some other problem in 2 weeks and we're going to figure that out as well. So let's just stay calm. And, you know, when my dad retired, and eventually he suffered with Alzheimer's. When he talked about his technology career, he never talked about the technical achievements. He talked about the people and about, boy, what happened to so-and-so? I remember when they did this one thing that was just so thoughtful. And I remember how they saved this whole project. And so, you know, all his reminiscences were about relationships and people and less about, because face it, you know, as soon as when I retire, my technical achievements that I did 3 years ago are going to be old hat, big deal.
Yeah, they'll be obsolete by then, Scott.
They will, but did we let people grow and did we plant seeds? Mm-hmm. Did we make things that are going to last in people investments and investments in the community? So I don't know if I veered off your question, but that's
perfect.
My mindset.
Well, because Lori, I told you that, you know, I know what kind of week you've had. I know what kind of week, what kind of month and season you have here with all these implementations. And she said, you know, Scott is calm, cool, and collected, you know, and that's the way she described you. But, you know, my friend Steve Cuss wrote the book, Managing Leadership Anxiety. Scott, and he says that, you know, the leader, you may be, you know, going crazy on the inside, but he said, you have got to have that calm demeanor because that's going to float down. That will float down in the team. And, you know, we all have those stressful times and it doesn't mean that you have to be, to your point before, I always want to be authentic, you know, and I can be vulnerable, but, you know, at the end of the day, as you were talking, I was thinking, the other thing, Scott, that you know is that you are not alone.
Yeah, that's right.
That you have a higher power that you can call on to for help. And, you know, I think that makes all the world a difference.
Yeah, and I'm not alone also that I've got a great team that I work with and both my peers and the people that work for me. And I got a great leadership team here at Mercy. And I'll be authentic. Like, guys, I don't know what to do here. Help me figure out what our next step should be. So that's definitely a super important thing. And I don't want to pretend that I never have stress or that I'm never anxious, but it just,
right.
You know, if you give yourself time to work through it, you just realize, okay, we're going to be fine.
We could probably do a whole podcast on that, you know, because I'm just thinking sometimes the problem or the challenge before you, the obstacle looks monumental, but you know, there's things that you can do to break it down and chunk it down.
Yeah,
you know, what can I do right now? What one thing can I do right now to make it a little bit better, you know, and you just keep doing that. So, gosh, Scott, there's so much more I want to talk about, predictive analytics, data analytics, all kinds of stuff, but we're kind of running out of time here. So I have some rapid fire questions for you that I just thought would be kind of fun to ask you. I have a friend, Jeff Henderson. He's actually been on the podcast. He wrote the book Four. Love this guy. He says, you know, win the morning, win the day.
Yeah.
But the morning starts the night before. And so he's got this whole philosophy around how you prep for the day. But many really successful leaders, great leaders, have morning routines. And I assume you have one. So what is your morning routine, Scott?
Yeah, nothing magic. I do, you know, like for instance, I'll do my devotional and my kind of deep thought time really more before I go to bed. And then my morning is, I feel like I got into exercise many years ago, so I'll get up and do something, whether it's a run or some kind of weightlifting routine. And I finally got some equipment in my house, so I can do a lot of these things in my basement. But I definitely prefer it to get outside and run 3, 4, 5 miles and either just in silence or listen to some inspirational podcast or an audiobook. So that way I feel like I started the day high energy. I've already accomplished something. By the time I get to the office, I've already done something that's put me into gear and pop the clutch on my day. So definitely love to do that.
I love that. What's the best piece of advice you've ever received?
Boy, that's, you know, I think it goes back to, just around trusting God to, you know, there's a scripture in Philippians says he's a work at us to both the will and the do his good pleasure. So he'll help us want the right things and he'll help us do the right things. And so just the advice, like I said, go back to that problem I had with my 20s of not feeling like I had my passion figured out and just realizing, hey, God's a work in me to want to do the right things.
Yeah.
And so I think that just giving yourself a break, don't feel like you have to have everything figured out. Just look at your next step and wait for the opportunities to come by and you'll be fine.
Yeah, that's great. Well, I know you're a big reader. Are you reading something right now? And if you are, what is it and what are you learning?
So I kind of mix up. I definitely read a lot of, you know, articles around tech and healthcare, and, you know, there's a lot of changes we need to make in healthcare to make things better. But I like, obviously, leadership books, but things like, this one's a bit old, but I think there was a book called Eric Larson's In the Garden of Beasts. And it was about the U.S. ambassadors to Germany's experience in Germany during the rise of Hitler. And it was just kind of a good example of, here's things he didn't have the benefit of hindsight in history, but him and his family were dealing with, wow, what's going on here? And is this important? Is this really going to stick? Is the country really going to go this way? And just, I think it's always interesting to read about in history, people's perceptions before the big event. Mm-hmm. That how did they respond to it? Did they draw lines? Did they stick to their convictions? Did they fall back and say, well, this is just a little thing, and it, you know, Hitler won't be that bad.
Yeah.
So I like reading those points in time. And mm-hmm. So that's a book I like recently. So.
Yeah, very good. What about, there may be a listener on today that's listening, Scott, who really may be aspiring for that top technology spot. What kind of advice would you give them?
I think in general, if you want to be a leader, you got to have empathy and compassion. I think that's definitely a key thing. And always, to me, it's important to have the mentality of understanding what the organization you work for, what they need, and that you are really a partner. We're not here to make achievements in technology, but we're here to enable our organization to achieve the goals and transform into what's next. So in technology, you have the opportunity to bring ideas that are tech driven, but other times, other parts of the business says, hey, I got this problem and I need to solve it. And this is the way we might solve it. And I say, okay, I can help with that. So you doesn't always have to be your idea. Be willing to enable the organization, and individual accomplishments mean less and less as you go along in your life, as much as your value to the organization and creating opportunities for teams to grow. So I think always just, you know, one of the practical things I've always done is think about wherever level I'm at, what's my boss's level's problem?
Okay, what are they? That's good.
What are they trying to solve? Because usually that ends up being my problem as well. It's like, I can't do right. This good thing because, oh, the organization is kind of dysfunctional in this particular thing. So, mm-hmm. so help always thinking about, okay, how do I help my boss figure out what his issues mm-hmm. are, and how do I contribute to that? And that generally makes a way for you to bump up in the organization. Okay, well, Scott really helped out with this, and this is, I think we need to do what Scott did over here.
Yes. Great advice. One more question for you. This is the question I ask every guest. It's the common thread through every Something Extra episode, you know, and I'll give you two if you need to have two, because mm-hmm. there really are a lot of them, Scott. But what do you believe is a something extra that every leader needs?
I think if you can connect with purpose and meaningfulness. So if you really start to figure out what's important to you in life and what do you want to support or advance. And, you know, we've talked already about mine is a lot about just being honorable to God and my faith, and making sure that everyone in my life that I'm working with or for is benefited from me being there. And then that, you know, second part of that is me really, you have to care about what you're doing. So meaningfulness is so important. Mm-hmm. And just think about as you go through your career, you know, find, it doesn't have to be, you know, a nonprofit healthcare organization. You can find meaningfulness and changing an industry or enabling some new products for consumers that are going to change the way they live. So I think it's really, if you really don't discount meaningfulness in your career development, it's really something that you'll have a career you can be proud of if you're doing something that's impacting the world.
Yeah, that's so good. Well, Scott, This has been so much fun for me. Thank you so much. I know that this episode is going to affect our listeners in a positive way. I appreciate who you are. Thank you for how you show up. And every time I see you, I mean, you're the same person. So just, and I appreciate that about you. So thank you so much for making the time to be on the show today.
Yeah, well, Lisa, I appreciate the same things about you. Your staying power. You've been great for the technology community. You're doing great things with this leadership podcast. So definitely a big supporter of yours. I'm really happy I can be a part of it today.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to today's show. Something Extra with Lisa Nichols is a Technology Partners production. Copyright Technology Partners, Inc. 2019. For show notes or to reach Lisa, visit tpi.co/podcast. Don't forget to leave a review on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or wherever you listen.